content of this program is intended for a print and visually impaired audience. Hello, this is Ed Tremblay from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next half hour, I'll be reading to you from the Tar Heel Junior Historian magazine. Going to resume reading articles from the September 2011 issue, Remembering the Civil War. And the first article today will be Tar Heel Generals in Gray, written by Daniel W. Barefoot, who is a Phi Beta Kappa graduate of UNC Chapel Hill and its law school. He's an attorney and an author of 12 books, including General Robert F. Hoke, Lee's Modest Warrior, Let Us Die Like Brave Men, and North Carolina's Haunted Hundred. He served three terms as a member of the North Carolina House of Representatives. Major General Robert F. Hoke spent much of the long, hot summer of 1864 in the trenches around Petersburg, Virginia. The North Carolinian and his troops were helping defend the town for the Confederate States of America. One July night, as Confederate officers considered a secret mission that involved freeing thousands of Southern prisoners of war in Maryland, a naval officer visited General Robert E. Lee. He asked for the help of a brave, highly competent Army officer who could quickly inspire and organize the men. "The only officer here I could recommend for the duty is General Hoke," the Confederacy's top Civil War commander replied. "If he was taken from his division in the present emergency, I would not know what to do with it. I am afraid it would be lost to us." Among the myriad of important contributions that North Carolina made to the Confederate war effort was providing leaders. Nearly three dozen men who were born or lived in the state served as Confederate generals of various ranks. Some received such appointments because of prior records of long and distinguished service in the United States Army. But many attained promotion up the ranks because of their strong leadership and hard fighting after the Civil War began. Two of the youngest major generals, North Carolina's Hoke and Stephen Dodson Ramseur, reached high command after establishing themselves as remarkable military leaders on numerous battlefields from the war's early days. Friends since childhood, Hoke and Ramseur would meet different fates. Born 4 days apart in May 1837 in Lincolnton, 30 miles northwest of Charlotte, Hoke and Ramseur grew up blocks from each other. They attended nearby Pleasant Retreat Academy, a school known for academic excellence. Young Robert and Dodson, as Ramseur was known, enjoyed hunting and hiking in the fields and forests around town. They fished and swam in local creeks and the South Fork River. They became expert horsemen. All of these skills would later prove useful in the Army. As a teenager, Hoke enrolled at the Kentucky Military Institute, a distinguished military school with a faculty of West Point graduates. Ramseur attended Davidson College until receiving an appointment to the U.S. Military Academy. He graduated from West Point in 1860, in the last full graduating class before the outbreak of war. In early May 1861, Hoke and Ramseur were reunited in Raleigh. Soldiers from all parts of North Carolina had gathered there as the state's leaders debated joining the Confederacy. Hoke was a second lieutenant of Company K of the 1st North Carolina Volunteers. Ramseur, who had recently resigned his commission as a second lieutenant in the United States Army, served as commander of the artillery brigade of Governor John W. Ellis. On May 20th, Ramseur and his cannoneers were positioned at the state capitol on Union Square when statesmen inside the building signaled with a handkerchief that North Carolina had officially seceded from the Union. Ramseur promptly ordered the 100-gun salute that hailed the event. Hoke, however, was not on hand for the great excitement in Raleigh. 3 days earlier, he, his company, and two other companies of North Carolina troops had been dispatched to Virginia by train. Hoke was among the first Tar Heel soldiers to leave the state to take part in the war. Less than a month later, he fought in the first significant battle, the Battle of Big Bethel, on the Tidewater Peninsula of Virginia. Over the next 12 months, Hoke and Ramseur proved themselves as two of the best, hardest-hitting young officers in the Confederate Army. As colonels, they skillfully led their soldiers in desperate fighting in the 7 days' battles around the Confederate capital of Richmond, Virginia, in the late spring and early summer of 1862. On July 1st, at the last of these battles, Malvern Hill, Ramseur sustained a serious wound that resulted in permanent paralysis of his right arm. While recuperating in North Carolina, he began courting Ellen Richmond of Milton. The two married a year later. In late October 1862, Ramseur was promoted to the rank of Brigadier General. Meanwhile, during the second half of 1862, Hoke led his troops in significant battles in Virginia and Maryland, including Cedar Mountain, Second Manassas, Harper's Ferry, Sharpsburg or Antietam, and Fredericksburg. At the Battle of Fredericksburg in December 1862, Hoke led an entire brigade in a searing charge against the enemy. In appreciation of Hoke's efforts in that Confederate victory and in recognition of his talents and leadership skills, Lee promoted him to the rank of Brigadier General a month later. In May 1863, Hoke, operating once again in Fredericksburg, masterfully protected the rear of the Confederate Army as Lee and General Stonewall Jackson won a spectacular victory at nearby Chancellorsville. In the course of intense fighting, Hoke was shot from his horse. He suffered a severe wound to the left shoulder. Field surgeons said that his left arm should be amputated to prevent a life-threatening infection. The general did not allow the doctors to remove his arm, but the injury kept him out of action for the entire summer. Hoke could not accompany his brigade on Lee's invasion of the North, which culminated in Pennsylvania at the Battle of Gettysburg during the first 3 days of July 1863. Ramseur was very visible on the first day there. He and his troops chased fleeing Union soldiers through the streets of downtown Gettysburg. If he was guiding them, they never distrusted, never hesitated, never quailed. E.H. Harding, a clergyman in the brigade, later wrote of the faith that Ramseur's men had in him, similar to that enjoyed by Jackson, he said. They had the most unbounded confidence in Ramseur's daring, skill, and military resource. In the spring of 1864, Hoke collaborated with Lee and Confederate President Jefferson Davis to prepare an ambitious plan to drive Union forces from three important towns in northeastern North Carolina. As campaign commander, Hoke set out from Tarboro with a force of some 7,000 troops on April 15th. 3 days later, he launched a massive assault against the heavily fortified town of Plymouth on the Roanoke River. Aided on the river by the newly constructed ironclad CSS Albemarle, Hoke's land forces in a 2-day battle won the cleanest and most complete victory ever won for the Confederacy in North Carolina. Upon receiving news that Hoke had captured Plymouth and many badly needed supplies, Davis immediately promoted the Tar Heel to the rank of Major General. This battlefield promotion, a month before Hoke's 27th birthday, made him the youngest ever major general in the Confederate Army. Before Hoke could complete the goal of driving Union forces out of the northern coastal plain, he and his troops were called back to Virginia. Lee needed manpower against the coming summer offensive of the United States Army. Ramseur and his forces were already in Virginia. On May 18th, the general played a pivotal role in an impressive Confederate victory at the Battle of Spotsylvania Courthouse. Lee summoned Ramseur to his headquarters to offer his personal gratitude, the highest compliment that a Southern officer could receive. Just 1 day after Ramseur's 27th birthday, Lee promoted him to Major General, making him the youngest West Pointer to attain that rank for the Confederates. During the late spring of 1864 and throughout that summer, Hoke played a major role in the heavy fighting in Virginia. He aided in bottling up Union General Benjamin Butler's army at Bermuda Hundred in May. In early June, Hoke and his division manned the center of the Confederate lines in bloody fighting at Cold Harbor, where Union General Ulysses Grant received what he termed his worst drubbing of the war. For the rest of the summer, Hoke fought in and around Petersburg. As autumn arrived, he and his forces were assigned to defend Richmond. On a daily basis for almost 3 months, he rode in the company of Lee. During this time, Ramseur and his division fought Union forces in the Shenandoah Valley of Virginia. Late in the day on October 18, 1864, Ramseur received a rather cryptic message from North Carolina, wigwagged from mountain peak to mountain peak by the Confederate Signal Corps. It read, "The crisis is over and all is well." The young general knew the message meant his wife had given birth to their first child. In the pre-dawn hours of October 19th, as Ramseur prepared for the coming combat at the Battle of Cedar Creek, he pinned a white flower to the lapel of his gray frock coat in honor of his newborn, not knowing if the baby was a boy or a girl. By late afternoon, the battle had turned against the Confederates. As Ramseur rode up and down his lines to rally his troops, a gunshot plowed through both of his lungs. The critically wounded young general was captured and rushed to Belgrove Mansion, the Union headquarters. The chief medical officer of the Union Army and a captured Confederate surgeon worked side by side in a desperate attempt to save his life. They soon agreed that the wound was fatal. Throughout the night, Ramseur lingered in great pain. Union officers, among them old West Point classmates such as General George Armstrong Custer, visited him. Ramseur offered dying words for his lifelong friend. "Tell General Hoke that I died a Christian and have done my duty." He asked for a lock of hair to be sent to his wife. At 10:27 on the cold gray morning of October 20th, he died. A federal honor detail transported his coffin to the Confederate lines outside of Richmond, where Hoke received it under a flag of truce. After lying in state at the Confederate capital, Ramseur's body was sent home by train for burial in the Episcopal Church Cemetery in Lincolnton. For the rest of the war, Hoke stayed busy defending his native state. In December 1864, he and his soldiers were dispatched to southeastern North Carolina to push back Union advances. In early March 1865, Hoke masterminded one of the last Confederate field victories near Kinston at the Battle of Southwest Creek, or Weiss Fork. Some 10 days later, Hoke and his troops comprised one-fourth of the 20,000-man army that faced massive Union forces at Bentonville. On April 12th, as the Northern Army moved toward Raleigh, Hoke's forces were the last Southern soldiers to leave the capital. Governor Zebulon B. Vance fled later that evening to the relative safety of Hoke's encampment near Cary. When the war ended, it ended forever for Hoke, who spoke little of his service. He rode his war horse home to Lincolnton in the early days of May 1865. Immediately, he hitched the animal to a plow and began making a summer crop for his family, including siblings and a widowed mother. He later married and had 6 children. Friends and neighbors were shocked to see a high-ranking officer and war hero working in the hot sun behind a plow. Hoke simply said, "It was the duty of the moment." For the rest of his life, the general went around rebuilding the South. Perhaps his greatest accomplishment in that effort was the construction of the railroad that initially ran from Monroe to Atlanta, Georgia. It became the basis of the modern Seaboard Coastline Railroad. In 1911, the North Carolina General Assembly created the 99th county of the state and named it Hoke County. On July 3, 1912, the old citizen soldier died at his summer home in Lincolnton. His body was transported for burial in Oakwood Cemetery in Raleigh, where the city streets were draped in black. The state legislature adjourned in respect. Near the close of his long life, Hoke had been asked to offer some advice to young people. His words were simple but powerful: strict attention to all duties of life. Here's an accompanying article, Ranking Generals. In the Confederate Army, the highest-ranking military officer was the general. There were 4 ranks of the office of general, from the most senior, general, full, lieutenant general, major general, and brigadier general. The number of troops that a general commanded grew as he rose in rank. A brigadier general, for example, might command 5,000 men. A full general might command 75,000 to 100,000. From the beginning to the end of the Civil War, no more than 8 men held the rank of full general in the Confederate Army. One was a native North Carolinian, General Braxton Bragg. Born in Warrenton in 1817, Bragg was a graduate of the U.S. Military Academy at West Point, who later served as a military advisor to Jefferson Davis, President of the Confederate States of America. He is the namesake of Fort Bragg. His older brother Thomas served as governor of North Carolina and United States Senator before being appointed Attorney General, the chief legal officer of the Confederacy. Here is a list of Civil War generals appointed by North Carolina, listed with birthplace. Starting with the Brigadier Generals. George Burgoyne Anderson of Hillsboro, who was killed in battle. Lawrence Simmons Baker of Gates County. Rufus Barringer of Cabarrus County. John Decatur Berry of Wilmington. Lawrence O'Brien Branch of Enfield, killed in battle. Thomas Lanier Klingman of Huntsville, John Rogers Cook of Jefferson Barracks, Missouri, William Ruffin Cox of Scotland Neck, Junius Daniel of Halifax, killed in battle, Richard Caswell Gatlin of Lenoir County, Archibald Campbell Godwin of Nansemond County, Virginia, killed in battle, James Byron Gordon of Wilkesboro, killed in battle, Robert Daniel Johnston of Lincoln County, William Wedby Kirkland of Hillsboro, James Henry Lane, Matthews Courthouse, Virginia, Colette Leventhorpe of Devonshire, England, William Gaston Lewis of Rocky Mount, William McCrae of Wilmington, James Green Martin of Elizabeth City, James Johnston Pettigrew of Terrell County, killed in battle, Matthew Whitaker Ransom of Warren County, William Paul Roberts of Gates County, Alfred Moore Scales of Reidsville, Thomas Fentress Toon of Columbus County, and Robert Brank Vance of Buncombe County. Major Generals, Brian Grimes of Pitt County, Robert F. Hoke of Lincolnton, William Dorsey Pender of Edgecombe County, killed in battle, Stephen Dodson Ramseur of Lincolnton, killed in battle, Robert Ransom, Jr. of Warren County, and William Henry Chase Whiting of Biloxi, Mississippi, killed in battle. Lieutenant Generals Daniel Harvey Hill of York District, South Carolina, and Theophilus Hunter Holmes of Sampson County. And full generals, Braxton Bragg of Warrenton. Several North Carolina natives living in other states of the Confederacy also served as generals in the Civil War. Some appointments listed were temporary. There are a number of photographs that accompanied the Tar Heel Generals in Gray article, and here are their captions. A native of Lincolnton, Robert F. Hoke rose to the rank of Major General during the Civil War and made important post-war contributions. A native of Lincolnton, Stephen Dodson Ramseur, rose to the rank of Major General during the Civil War. Ramseur died at age 27 in October 1864 of battle wounds. Headquarters flag of General Robert F. Hoke. This is a second national pattern Confederate flag adopted on May 1, 1863, and used until replaced on March 4, 1865. Because of its large white field, the flag was called the Stainless Banner. It marked Hoke's headquarters during his brilliant victory at Plymouth on April 20, 1864, and was donated to the state sometime after his death in 1912. Two of Robert Hoke's grandsons attend the May 1920 placement of a marker honoring him at the Southwest Creek Battlefield near Kinston. After the death of her husband, Dodson Ramseur, Ellen Richmond Ramseur never remarried and wore black mourning clothing for the rest of her life. She and the couple's daughter, Mary, eventually were buried on either side of the general. The next article is Money Trouble, North Carolina Currency During the Civil War by Linda Jacobson, who is keeper of the North Carolina Collection Gallery and an assistant librarian at the Wilson Special Collections Library at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. As gallery keeper, she manages over 22,000 museum objects, including an extensive collection of coins and tokens, paper currencies, and other money-related material. The Civil War affected every aspect of life in the South, right down to the money in people's pockets. Today, we're used to one form of currency, the paper money and coins issued by the national government. This money is accepted anywhere in the United States. We also expect that the dollar bill in our pockets will be worth a dollar tomorrow and the day after. However, things were not always so simple. Throughout most of early American history, people preferred to trade with gold and silver coins. During the Civil War, few coins were available. To keep the Southern economy going and pay for the war, the new government of the Confederate States of America began printing its own paper money. At the beginning of the war, people across the South were asked to accept this Confederate money in payment for salaries, goods, services, and taxes. In addition to the more than $1.5 billion in currency printed by the Confederacy, seceded states' governments produced their own money. The North Carolina legislature issued almost $8 million of its own paper notes during the war. Most of the notes produced for the state looked plain in design because, by today's standards, because they had to be printed cheaply and quickly. Paper became scarce, so many notes were printed on the backs of recycled notes or on other low-quality paper. The simple designs and inexpensive paper made it easy for dishonest people to counterfeit or make fake currency and pass it off as real. North Carolina towns, counties, banks, and insurance companies added to the confusion by printing their own money, too. Some bills carried a face value of only 5 or 10 cents. We can learn a great deal about the lifestyles and values of Civil War-era North Carolinians by looking at the artwork on their money. For example, most Tar Heels depended on agriculture to earn a living. Many notes feature images of wheat, cotton, and other crops. Images of the trains and ships that transported these products symbolize the prospect, the progress and prosperity for which North Carolina hoped. Images of enslaved African Americans appeared on both Confederate and North Carolina notes. Many Southerners wanted to portray slavery in a positive light and as a regular accepted part of life. Some notes show contented and well-dressed African Americans plowing fields or picking cotton. Although there was a large amount of paper money available, it lost value with every Confederate army defeat. At the same time, Southerners suffered from shortages of everyday necessities such as food and clothing. A combination of shortages and too much money led to an increase or inflation in the prices charged for goods. For example, a pound of bacon that sold in Raleigh for 33 cents in 1862 priced at $7.50 by 1865. An $18 barrel of flour cost $500 by the end of the war. A simple pair of leather shoes cost as much as $600. Inflation and shortages grew so severe that in November 1862, North Carolina Governor Zebulon Vance complained that flour can now be used only by the rich. At war's end, suffering and poverty had become a way of life for many Southern residents. Some people lost homes. Many could not pay their bills or properly feed and clothe their families. The paper money that they had was worthless. The paper money, while many people got rid of the paper money, others kept it, hoping that it would eventually be more valuable. Today, collectors and historians are glad that people kept Civil War currency. The study of this money is fascinating because of the rich history found in each note and what it tells about life in North Carolina during the Civil War. Did you know that people who collect and study coins and other forms of money are called numismatists? To learn more about Civil War money yourself, visit the Southern Homefront 1861 to 1865 at docsouth.unc.edu and Historic Monies in the North Carolina Collection at www.lib.unc.edu. There are several photographs, and here are their captions. Counterfeit North Carolina 50-cent note, 1861. Soon after the release of the state's first treasury notes, fakes began to appear. The hornet's nest at the center of this 1862 note symbolizes defiance against the United States of America. All images on this page, courtesy of the North Carolina Collection, UNC Chapel Hill. Many Southerners supported continuation of slavery. This 1862 note shows a slave plowing a field. Notice the low face values of some notes. This one happens to be 10 cents. Those with a face value of less than a dollar are called fractionals. And from the activities pages, what did he say? Soldiers during the Civil War often used the following words and phrases. Can you imagine, match the 1860s term in column A below with its modern meaning in column B? I'll read off the column A's and give you the column B answers right afterwards. First, blue belly, an insulting term for a Union soldier. Breadbasket, stomach. Campaign, a series of battles. Koosh, that's C-O-O-S-H. That's cornmeal and bacon grease fried together. Fit to be tied, angry. Fresh fish, new soldiers. Front, area where a battle is being fought. Goobers, that's peanuts. Hish and hash, one dish meal made from whatever a soldier had on hand. Housewife, a small sewing kit with needles, thread, buttons, etc. Hornets, bullets. Hunky-dory, okay or good. Kepi, that's K-E-P-I, that's a hat or a cap. Laboratory, building where ammunition was made. Pony, a boy soldier or a small adult soldier. Possum, a buddy or friend. Sawbones, a surgeon. Skedaddle, runaway or retreat. Sutler, a civilian who followed soldiers to sell food, tobacco, toiletries, or clothing. That was S-U-T-L-E-R. And up the spout, to be in trouble or retreat. Monumental task, also on the activities pages. Since 1868 and as recently as 2010, groups in the Tar Heel State have built monuments to remember the people and events of the Civil War. Many monuments recognize Confederate soldiers from a certain county, for example. Others note North Carolinians who fought for the Union. Monuments from northern states dot the national cemeteries in New Bern and Salisbury. A memorial to the United States Colored Troops stands in Hertford. Is there a Civil War monument near you? Access a database at ncmonuments.ncdcr.gov to search for the monuments in your area. Visit one of these monuments and learn all that you can about it, then try designing your own monument. What do you think is important to remember about the war? We've run out of time for today's episode of Independent Living. Be sure to listen next time. I hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Ed Tremblay, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for a print and visually impaired audience. If you have any comments, concerns, or questions, please call 919-832-5138.